Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you guys are doing fantastic. Today we have Brock Mogensen. He is the managing partner of Smart Asset Capital, and they are doing a bunch of stuff, and it's going to be really cool and interesting. Brock, thank you for being here. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on.
100%. We have tons to talk about. You know, before we dig into this whole story, tell us a little bit of what you guys do in Smart Asset Capital. Just an elevator pitch, you know, like a 2-minute thing.
Yep.
Go ahead.
So we are based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin area. And essentially what we are doing is syndication. For those not familiar with what syndication is, essentially raising money from investors to go out and buy larger deals. So I'm on the general partner side. We raise equity from limited partners to buy these deals. So been doing it for about 3 years now. We've completed 6 transactions, syndications, and it varies from apartment buildings to, we got retail, office, self-storage, industrial. So we got several different asset classes, multifamily being our main focus, but kind of pivoted into some other asset classes, including some triple net deals. So it's kind of what we're doing. It's been awesome so far and really enjoying it.
First of all, it sounds awesome. It sounds like we have a lot to discuss because so many asset classes gives us, you know, a full range of stuff to discuss. So it's really fun. But tell me something. How did you get into this whole thing called real estate? If you could tell your personal pitch, your personal story.
Yep. So kind of goes back to, I was growing up, my dad owned 2 duplexes. So he had 4 units. My parents were very blue collar. My dad drove a cement truck. My mom was a teacher, you know, real blue collar, and kind of just saw the power of what simply owning 4 units can change in your income and your ability to, you know, have that extra income, passive income. And that, so immediately kind of growing up, it was like, okay, you know, I got to do this. Right when I got out of college, it was like, let me kind of save some money for the next 2 years and then go out and buy a duplex. That just was a logical thing for me. And did that, you know, lived on one side, rented out the other, the house hack model, which was great. Learned a ton, was able to live for free. And that really just was like a light bulb moment where I was like, all right, like, this is awesome. I need to double down on this. Like, let me, I just want to keep growing in real estate because this is great. And kind of spent the next 6 months to the year kind of researching different avenues in real estate, right? I mean, there's so many different ways you could go. Did I want to start flipping houses? Did I want to, you know, buy some more duplexes? What do I want to do? Came across this concept of syndication, right? And that was kind of where that caught my attention. I was like, if I go this way, I can really build a business and kind of, something bigger kind of, and it really just caught my attention. So that's where I went, spent, and then immediately realized that, okay, I don't have the experience. I don't have, you know, I don't have the money. I don't have the net worth. I don't have any of these things that's required to go out and buy a $5 million deal. So it was like, okay, I need to find partners. How am I going to be attracted to partners? Let me kind of become, you know, really proficient in one piece of what goes into doing these deals. For me, that was underwriting. Spent 6 months just learning everything I could to practicing, analyzing deals. Went out, networked, found some partners that had more experience. And then 6 months after that, we bought our first 89-unit apartment building.
Sounds really exciting. But you know what? Let's go back a little bit because I'm curious about one part. What got you, meaning obviously you went in and you said, okay, I don't know enough. I need to know more people. I need to know the right people, all that stuff, right? What actions did you take in order to go and meet those people and know those people and find those guys, as well as educate yourself in underwriting and understanding the numbers and understanding what, you know, the types of stuff you have to know in order to get into commercial real estate? what was your take, you know, in terms of the actions that you had to do?
Yeah. So I think it all starts with, like most things, starts with the education. And for me, I mean, it was really just podcasts, books, you know, YouTube videos, all that. I did a few like smaller paid courses, but nothing too big. And it was just every day listening to podcasts, reading books. Okay. And then to learn the underwriting, I would just practice. I would just pull up, I'd go on LoopNet, you know, find a deal that was kind of in the size range and would just start plugging numbers in. And then that would lead to this question. Okay. You know, how much is a typical water bill or whatever it might be? Did some, you know, I was just kind of a whole bunch of researching and just practicing and did that for 6 months. And eventually I became more and more confident to where I could start, you know, networking and kind of talking with people and knowing the language. So the education is always the first step in whatever capacity you do it. And I mean, nowadays there's so much great information out, you know, out for free on the internet that you can learn. And then the next thing was the networking. And for me, it was just connecting with people. I was going to, you know, I'd look up every single networking, real estate networking event within an hour of me. And I'd be driving, you know, 3-4 days a week, going to these events, meeting people. I'd be on the Bigger Pockets. That's a great way to connect with people. That's how I actually met my partner, met up for coffee with him a few times. And then we kind of just talking about our goals, and that led to us creating a partnership. So, I mean, it was just really just the education, networking. I mean, those are the two huge things that are going to get you going in real estate.
You know, it's amazing. I love that story. Tell me something. And you, meaning I'm looking at you on the screen for the people who listen to the, you know, the audio medium, you're a young guy. how old are you? Can I ask?
Yep. I'm 27.
27. So you started, so you said 3 years. So with my calculation, you're talking about 23 years old, right? Around.
Yep. Yep. Right around there is when I'm 23
years old. It's very young. So you guys are listening and you're thinking, I'm too young, I'm too this. Usually, a lot of times they talk to people who think they're too old. Okay. That's another issue. But I'm talking to the people who think they're too young. You're never too young. You're not too young. You can educate yourself even if you didn't study that in college or you didn't go to college. Doesn't matter. You can educate yourself. You can take a few basic courses. You can start just going on LoopNet and looking at deals, start plugging numbers, and then you can get into it. But you know what? Let me ask you this. You got into it and you probably weren't on the syndication side of things, right? That was the beginning, I'm assuming, right?
Yep.
When was the point? Because syndication requires the ability to check on the GP, on the general partner, to be able to know what he does or she does and how to do the right due diligence on the deal on top of their due diligence as well as on them. Let me ask you this. When was the point that you said, you know what, I'm ready to take it upon myself and to go on? Or meaning, because you said you guys on the GP side, if I didn't make, right? You're on the GP side. When was that point that you said, okay, I can take it on my own?
Yeah. So the first syndication I did, I was on the GP side from the duplex to that first deal was on the GP side. And it was really, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I was so, there's no way I could have done it without my partners. I mean, that first deal, I mean, I felt confident and kind of looking at deals and, you know, some of the core principles, but having the track record and everything else that goes into getting these deals done, I had none of that. So, I mean, I really had to lean on my partners I mean, still do. I mean, our partnership's great and kind of everyone complements each other's skill sets, but I think it's really hard to do without partners. There's just so much that goes into those deals that you have to have, you know, people that are stronger in certain skill sets that can kind of combine forces to get these deals done. So that for me, I mean, now after we've done a handful of them, I've learned a lot more and I can kind of feel more confident in all arenas of doing these deals. But first one, I mean, yeah, it was more so just, I know this lane, let me kind of make sure I'm adding value in this lane. And then you guys kind of run these lanes and we'll combine forces and get this deal done. So that was really the key to starting out for me.
So tell me, so running forward to what you guys do today with multifamily. We're going to run through the other asset classes in a second. We're going to talk about that. But first, multifamily. So what type of deals you're going after today? Is that you say you're in you're in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Are you doing things in the area that you guys are based in, or you go elsewhere in terms of location?
So right now we are staying roughly within an hour radius of the greater Milwaukee area. My partner has an in-house property management company. So that's kind of our strategy right now is to stay like within an hour radius of there. So there's plenty of markets within an hour of there. So that's, so far, that's where we've done everything.
I got it. And what type of deals you guys are going for within the multifamily sector?
So we
units, you know, stuff like that. Just in curiosity, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, ideally, you know, 100 plus unit, B class, value add. That's also what the rest of the world is looking for. So those are nowadays extremely competitive. Yep.
You know, go ahead. Finish.
I was just gonna say, but I mean, yeah, we're so that's kind of our target deal right now. But I'd say now, like we've done some C class stuff. Now I think we're focusing more on the, you know, the B to A space. Value add doesn't have to be a huge like heavy lift value add. We would do those, but it's more kind of, you know, more stuff we can come in light value add deals that are already cash flowing. We like to buy deals that have strong cash flow, not that are burning money right out of the gate. So that's kind of our strategy right now, is to buy stuff that, you know, the area is it's a good area, it's got growth, and it's got tenants that, the way I'm looking at deals now too, you know, after this whole post COVID thing and kind of seeing the eviction moratorium and everything, and having experience, you know, owning buildings in C-class areas that have had, you know, lots of tenants that haven't paid rent in a year. I'd say I'm focusing on locations where I know the tenant cares about their credit score.
So first of all, it sounds really interesting, but you know what, as you say, a lot of people are going for the B and A classes right now. What type of a value add play today you could say that you guys are going after? Or what's your strategy today?
Yeah, more finding deals that have a way to optimize the NOI, to increase the NOI. I mean, that's really, we really want, unless it's just a, you know, powerhouse cash flow, just running great and no need to, and, you know, the numbers work like that. Most time they don't, to provide good returns to investors over, you know, a 5 to 10 year period. There's got to be a way to optimize the NOI. So we're looking for something where we can, you know, juice it up, whether that's adding additional income, cutting expenses, increasing rents. I mean, right, there's a lot of different ways to do it.
Right.
But that's kind of our thing, is we have to find one way or more than one way that we can increase this NOI.
So I got it. You guys dig in the details, especially nowadays, that you don't want something aggressive. You want something that is, I would say, value add. Am I right? It's more core plus type of deals.
Yep. Oh yeah.
So you're looking at the details. It's much more professional. It's like those big organizations, those large institutionals, who are taking over billions of dollars of assets. And what they do is they have the expertise of going in and taking the little dollars and fixing them. And on a larger scale, that's the beauty of multifamily, because you have a lot of units, and then a little bit of each makes a lot, you know, out of the whole thing. So I love that. It's beautiful.
Yep.
Tell me something. Add other asset classes. Tell me about the, pick one, because you do so many things. Pick one of them. Let's talk about that.
I would say the asset class I'm most excited about right now is industrial.
Let's talk about industrial, because a lot of people are talking about it. What do you guys do with industrial?
So
we're also in the same area, correct? Like,
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, we have more of a defined zone for that we're targeting those deals. And there's kind of a corridor 20 minutes or so outside of Milwaukee that we're really targeting. But yeah, I mean, I'm just really excited about triple net. I mean, cap rates are pretty favorable there. I mean, you can find stuff here for, you know, 7.5 to 8 cap with strong long-term, you know, triple net leases. So that's kind of, I mean, we're still looking at other asset classes as well. Kind of, we have keep kind of broader scope on what we're looking to buy, but it's for me, I mean, the way I look at it is, it might not be the, you know, the sexy 100 unit apartment building that you can, this big value add deal where you're going to increase all these rents and, you know, flip it over in 4 years and double your money. But if you're buying an industrial triple net deal, so there's, you know, a strong tenant, so they got a 7 year lease, you know, it's backed by, you know, this big name that your money is almost guaranteed to come back, and you kind of look at it and your equity is recovered in that period. It's much more safe. You might be, you know, 8 to 10% cash on cash each year with a chance for appreciation. Usually there's some sort of value add play in there where we can, you know, convert lease styles, or we can increase rents. It's really, I think it's more so just much more favorable at this point for us to find the returns we're looking for in that space.
Tell me something. What are the things that you would call out that you had to learn in order to go into industrial?
The biggest thing for me to learn is was kind of triple net. I mean, for the triple net, I'm assuming most people kind of understand what that is, but you're billing back pretty much every expense that's non-structural to the tenant and they pay for it. So very favorable as an owner. But understanding how CAM works, common area maintenance, so that's the line item of the triple net money that's coming back into the landlord. But kind of just understanding how that works and how that plays and how you have to reconcile at the end of each year. And when you're underwriting, you know, assuming, okay, you know, we can bump CAM up in year two, what's current CAM, stuff like that, you know, CAM per square foot, all those different metrics where you might not really see in multifamily underwriting. A lot of the, I mean, the core principles are really the same. It's just some tweaks you kind of have to make and understand. Like you really have to dig more into the lease where, you know, multifamily building, you might, you kind of scroll through each lease and make sure everything lines up. But with an industrial lease, you really got to dive in and make sure, you know, okay, what are the rent increases? Is it 2 or 3%, you know, per year? All that stuff makes a huge difference. So, and there's usually less tenants, right? I mean, unless you're buying something insane where there's a whole bunch of tenants in one industrial building, usually it's, you know, one tenant, 2 or 3 tenants in one building. So you can kind of take more time and really just spend a lot of time on each tenant and diving in. I would say the hardest part in talking to other people in the space that are underwriting industrial deals, the hardest part with industrial underwriting is assuming which vacancy rate to use, right? I mean, with apartments, you know, if you're buying a deal that's, you know, 90% occupied or whatever, and you assume, okay, we're going to stay, you know, 7% vacant, you know, throughout the whole period, it's pretty, you can pretty use a straightforward number like that. And that's pretty common. Well, an industrial deal, you know, say you're targeting a 10-year hold, it's a 7-year lease, you know, it's kind of, you can do as much due diligence you want to kind of determine, you think these guys are going to renew or not at year 7. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a crapshoot and you're just guessing. So, you know, at year 8, are you assuming, you know, it's going to take you a year to fill the space? Do you assume, you know, 50% vacancy? It might take you 6 months to fill the space. That's kind of a little bit more of the nuance and kind of, I always lean towards the conservative route there. That's the only tough part, I think, when it comes to industrials, assuming what vacancy rates to use.
And tell me something. What about tenant relationships, meaning in terms of getting the right tenants? It's a whole different ballgame. You have to have relationships. You have to know the network. What'd you do about that?
Definitely. So, I mean, yeah, that's definitely the biggest, you know, one of the biggest things in industrial is lease up. It's much, obviously much tougher than, you know, renting a 2-bedroom apartment. It's going to be a lot easier than renting, you know, a 20,000 square foot industrial space. So that's where just having relationships with, I mean, we talk to tenants. We haven't gone through many lease ups to have, you know, a whole bunch of experience leasing up industrial spaces, but we, you know, through our property management company, we have leasing staff there that have connections with people, that we have leads coming in constantly. And you know, we have other connections with brokers that we've bought deals from that'll kind of send leads our way for tenants. So it's a lot of just kind of knowing people that are in that space that are talking to potential tenants. And the same thing, just networking, getting out there to kind of make sure that if you have a vacancy that, you know, the tenant finds out about it.
So first of all, it sounds so exciting, meaning moving from different asset classes. I always say that, meaning a lot of people are trying to focus on one, but then some people come and they say, okay, I'm bold. I'm a little bit more gutsy and I'm going to go and learn about, you know, another asset class and it's no big deal. I'm going to study that. I'm going to master it and I'm going to do that too. So I admire that. It's beautiful. Tell me something. Let's move to another asset class. You said office also. Am I correct? Or you said retail or both?
Both. Yeah, the office building.
So let's talk about office.
That's a sore subject. No, it's not that bad. We
it's
bought
an
office building.
It's a subject because I know it from a personal aspect, meaning it's a whole
yep.
story. But yeah, we know it's a sore, meaning we know what COVID did to us. But let's, you know what? I want to hear your pain because, you know, they say that when you talk about someone else's pain, it makes your pain a little bit less. So let's talk about your pain a little bit, you know?
Yep. Let's do it. Yeah. So, I mean, we bought an office building. It had been like 3 or 4 months before COVID hit and was doing great. I mean, actually, it's probably about six months or so. So, I mean, it started off great. Numbers were awesome. And then COVID hit. We had a few tenants that kind of like, oh, you know, we realized we don't need office space anymore. Or, you know, our company went under. So that we had a few of our anchor tenants that moved out. So obviously that's a big hit. I mean, it's still running profitably, still doing good. We're just leasing office space right now has proven to be pretty tough. Not as many leads coming in as before for filling some vacancies in office. So that's probably the one asset class we're staying away from right now. I'm not going to say I'm never going to do office deal again because you never know. I think the landscape can change a lot over the next couple of years. But right now it's an asset class I think we're not so excited about.
Right. There are too much unknowns, because places that were a home run, and that's what, you know, happened to us also. Many places which are home run in default pre-COVID. And everybody said, you know what, let's do it. It's great. All the young guys are coming in. You know, they're renting all those little units around the area and the downtown area. Everybody's going to the downtown area. It's the hottest place. And let's rent space and let's have all those, you know, tech companies that are coming, taking over. Everybody's in the office, you know, the environments. All of a sudden, COVID comes and poof, gone.
Yep.
Gone. In one day, just gone. Mm-hmm. And a great home run became a whole bust. And no one could see it. No one could see it. That's what happened to the hotel industry, obviously, and the retail industry. So that leads me to speak a little bit about retail, because that's one of the most exciting and most interesting asset classes that we could talk about for millions of reasons. And somehow correlated and attached to the industrial. But, you know, let's discuss that a little bit.
Yeah. So my opinion, contrary to probably, you know, most opinions out there, is I'm actually somewhat bullish on retail for the right price and the right one. For me, like suburban strip malls with, you know, service-based tenants on triple net leases that are strong, I actually we're looking at retail deals right now. As long as the tenants are strong, willing to sign, you know, long-term leases, triple net, and they're more so service-based type, you know, stores that aren't gonna, they can't get demolished by e-commerce, right? I mean, if it's like a shoe store or something like that, or a clothes store, I might want to pass on that. But, you know, if it's a bank or we have a building that has a church in it, I mean, stuff like that, where, you know, you can't really convert that to online. There's always gonna be a presence they're gonna need. So actually pretty bullish on that. Like I said, so I mean, we're looking at deals in that space. And yeah, actually pretty excited about it. I think cap rates, they kind of expand a little bit in retail. So I think there is some opportunity to buy some at some pretty favorable prices. Just a matter of finding the right one and doing the due diligence to make sure it's going to work long-term.
You know, let's talk a little bit about this because I love this. This topic is really exciting. And you just, you know, pointed out a little bit examples about tenants, types of tenants, tenant mix. Let's talk about this a little bit. What's your take on... Let's throw in a little bit of examples of types of tenants that you would say are more exciting than others. Like you said, shoe store, anything that the, you know, the e-commerce, Amazons and such could kill. I'm going for the opposite. Okay, so let's talk about those good ones. What type of good ones? Give me like a few examples of tenant mixes and types of centers within the suburban areas that could really, really work. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I think places like barbershops, hair salons, like I said, we have a bank, a Subway, you know, more like entertainment type places that actually need physical space to gather, you know, stuff like that.
Gyms.
Where it's like what was that?
A gym.
Gyms. Yes. Yeah. Gym. We have a gym there, like dance studios. We have one of those. I mean, stuff like that, where it's like, that can't get replaced by Zoom. I mean, I think you kind of try, but it doesn't really work. So, I mean, stuff like that where they need that physical space, they can't give it up unless their business goes under for one reason or another, but to operate their business, they need that space.
Exactly.
That's kind of that philosophy.
You know what I heard someone said, you can't drink a Starbucks out of your cell phone. You know, you can try your best, but
exactly.
It's not going to work. Or you said Subway or anything, McDonald's, doesn't matter. Any single thing that comes with food, especially food, people still like, you know, they need to actually be there and eat. So there's no other way. Even though COVID, challenged those places majorly and they had to close and they couldn't have people coming in. However, if they were smart and they were efficient, they could do deliveries. And if that happens, it still keeps their store and they can still pay the rent. So you have millions of methods and, as you said, hair salons, of course, meaning nail salons, meaning you still have to go there. Right. COVID is an issue. Hopefully, we're not going to have it back in the same scale that we had it before. You know, fingers crossed and praying, hoping, but, it's a big deal. And as long as it doesn't come back the way it was, retail in the right dynamics, in the right setting, can really be successful. Can really be successful.
Agreed.
Let's say, you know, just for the sake of example, for those who are, less retail savvy, and who are thinking about, okay, I just need more examples. Let's give them an example of, if you could give us an example of a type of an asset, of a retail asset, that property that you would not get close to, that you would say, no, I'm not getting close to.
If it was like a place that had like, single tenant, big space mall that was occupied by like a big clothing store, or, shoes, something like that, where that stuff can be completely done online. If there's the right tenant mix, and, some tenants are strong, and there's other that look a little weaker that might get, might be kind of run out of business. That's okay. Cause you can kind of feel, you just have to do analysis to determine, okay, if that tenant were to leave, do the other four tenants cover, my expenses and debt? Do I at least break even when they move out? Cause that's kind of a scenario you really have to run. You always have to kind of look at the worst case scenario. If they move out, you don't want all of a sudden to be burning, $10,000 a month because that tenant moved out, or whatever it might be. You want to make sure that, you kind of weigh out the different options of what might happen over the next 5 years or so. So that would be, as long as, there's not like a single tenant that's occupying like a massive amount of space that, on the horizon, you can kind of see on the horizon that might be going out of business. Those would be the ones I'd probably stay away from.
Tell me something. Let's move a little bit. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about financing. I mean, obviously you went through a lot of cycles in your life, even though you're young, but in terms of, moving from being the LP side on the syndication side, and then you moved to the GP side, you had to start signing loans. You had to be the guy who signed the loan, you and your partner. Tell us a little bit about that experience and what type of loans you guys are taking today. What type of financing you're taking? What are your no-nos and what are your strategies? Can you share that a little bit?
Yeah. So we've done our first deal. We did Fannie Mae agency debt, which offers great terms. I mean, a lot of hoops you have to jump through for that. They make you do a lot of weird rules. But they offer great terms, non-recourse, which is the biggest thing. So we did that. All the other deals we've done have been just local bank financing, just commercial financing through local bank lenders that we know. And they'll offer more, although the downside is it's almost always going to be recourse. If they do non-recourse, they're going to require a very low LTV. So that's the downside. The plus side is they're going to be more kind of lenient on terms. They're not going to really have prepayment penalties, which is huge. That's kind of big thing. If you have to exit a deal earlier, or you want to sell earlier or refinance earlier, you won't get hit with this massive fee. Where on agency debt, they're going to kill you on that in most scenarios, depending on how you structure it. So recently, our deals have been just through bank financing, not ruling out other financing options. We probably will use some other ones in the future, but recently it's just been kind of those options.
And tell me something, what type of LTV you guys will go for?
Most recently, our deals have been 75%.
Okay, that's good. That's pretty, that's pretty normal. It's not, way off as we call that.
Yeah.
Did you feel anything different with the lenders now versus pre-COVID? The way they act, the way they demand things, the way they ask you for the underwriting, certain different details that you add, they ask for you.
Yes, I do think there was definitely kind of tightened up on underwriting. I mean, especially like the agent said, I mean, they tightened up a ton. That's why I think the local bank's kind of nice right now, because they're a little bit more lenient on that stuff. And as long as the local banks, if you have a good relationship with them, they're going to put more, it's still all about the deal, but they'll put a little bit more weight on their trust in you and kind of your track record to give you the more favorable terms. But yeah, I mean, especially on like asset, like retail asset class and stuff, they're really doing their homework on that stuff to make sure tenants are going to be there and everything. Apartments, I think for the most part, they're not much has changed there, just because it kind of proved that, it did fine through everything for the most part. But yeah, definitely some subtle changes.
Yeah. It's a different world out there, as we call it. And talking about a different world, What do you think about the market nowadays? Locations, the shift, you know, from the urban to the suburban and possibly back at a certain point. Some say even right now. Well, what are your thoughts about this whole thing? Where are we going?
I'm on the camp of, I think people are going to move back into the cities. I do think there is going to be people that, you know, obviously people fled out to the suburbs. I think a good portion of them are going to kind of stay out there. They enjoy that lifestyle. But I think, and you're already seeing it, I mean, people miss living in the city. I mean, I live right downtown, and, you know, every day I have 100 different options I can go eat lunch from. And it's nice. I mean, I prefer being downtown and be able to walk places and kind of more in the scene, but people prefer in the suburbs. But I do think a good portion of people that kind of fled out, they're getting bored. You know, they want more options to do on the weekend, and they want, you know, more restaurants to choose from. So I think there's gonna be a good portion of people that kind of come back into the city, and they miss that downtown office life and the social aspect of it. I think it's still kind of going to take a while for it to kind of, you know, reposition back in. I do think certain cities are definitely going to be hurt for a long, long time. I think obviously some cities fared much better than others. But I'm on the side where, you know, I'm not like going out and buying everything downtown, because I do think it's more so, you know, you still have to kind of be careful, because I do think certain sectors like downtown office still kind of have a ways to go. I think a lot of companies are cutting office space, but I think apartments downtown, I mean, I'm, as long as there's demand for them, I like them.
I'm on the same position, residential versus office. Office will take more time. Residential is coming back. And you know what? I'm happy that I heard you talking. I'll tell you why. Because you're talking about, you're 27 years old. You're talking to a 48-year-old guy, okay? So my perspective, and the people, not even my age, younger than me, you know, the 35-year-olds who are married with one or two kids. I don't know if you're married or not. So those, imagine, you know, let's take the guy in somewhere in between us, you know, 35-year-old guy or girl, and they have a small family. For them, moving out of the urban, meaning being in the urban area, was great because they could just get down, go to the office. They have a little kid, maybe in kindergarten or something, you know, some daycare, and they drop him off and they go to their thing, and then they can go out, take a babysitter, go out tonight, so whatever, whatever. But then came COVID. And they said, okay, let's move to suburbia. They are not coming back to suburbia. They bought a house or they rented a house. They now saw the bigger, you know, bigger lifestyle, the more lavish lifestyle, you know, larger space, a backyard, the whole thing. So they're not going back. However, and I'm glad, that's why I said I'm glad I heard your perspective, because from your perspective, and there are many young guys who are bored in the suburban areas. Some of them went to their parents and they said, you know what, it's boring. You know, to go out, you have to go to the downtown area, which is half dead anyways.
Yep.
During COVID, you had no choice. But now, you know, you want to go to the downtown area. You want to go to the air. You know, you're there in Wisconsin, but, you know, I know New York. Right now, I'm not in New York, but I'm a New Yorker. So I know what New York City is. New York City is, you go down and you have all these millions of restaurants, meaning I'm talking about the vibrant New York City that you actually see right now. You're going down, you see millions of restaurants, people are sitting not only in the inside of the, you know, of those restaurants, but in the outside, they're sitting on the streets. You have those chairs and those beautiful canopies. It's an environment, it's a life, and people want that life and they miss it. So I love that perspective. I love it. Tell me something. Talking a little bit about, you know, the last thing that I want to discuss is a little bit about how you actually became a business, you know, having a team. I know you have partners, but having a team, people who work for you. Tell us a little bit about that, the experience of managing a team, having the right team, having the indoor, how to say, the in-house team versus the outsourced team. Tell us a little bit about your experience in the, you know, the management aspect.
Yeah, so it was definitely big. I mean, we kind of started just, let's just kind of partner up, but it was big having a partner that already had the property management company built. So we kind of leverage that and essentially be, you know, vertically integrated. So that was big, already having the direct relationships with, you know, the whole property management team and the VP there that, you know, we kind of, you know, have weekly calls with and are really in tune with there and on how they operate everything there. So that was big. Now kind of outside of the property management arena, as we're looking to scale, I mean, we have virtual assistant, that we kind of outsource a good amount of stuff to, we're looking, we kind of have a longer term plan of hiring more and more people as we kind of delegate more things. We're still at the scale right now where we can't go full blown and start, you know, hiring VPs and, you know, CFO and everything. Eventually we'll get to that point. But it's been great so far, just kind of learning how to delegate tasks. I'm a big person on creating systems and figuring out ways to create systems so you don't have to do stuff every day. So that's kind of where having virtual assistants can help automate a lot of those things. And that's what we've done with a lot of our weekly processes. So I don't necessarily have to be involved with everything. I'm still kind of overseeing a lot just because we haven't reached the scale where, you know, we can hire out everything. You got, you know, you kind of got to start and do a lot of stuff in the beginning. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at so far.
I love that. You know what? It's especially a good real estate operation keeps it lean, especially in the beginning. And I know a lot of real estate operations, you know, from little to huge. And many of them are still keeping it lean. You know, they have a small staff. Yeah. Some of them got to a point that they got to 10 people in the office. They have portfolios of billions of dollars, but they have 10 people in the office and that is it. And they have a lot of outsourced, but in the office, they have few people to the right, to the left, that deal with whatever they have to deal with, et cetera. It doesn't mean everybody does that. Some people, you know, they do it like a lot bigger, but that's the way it is. So it's very, very exciting. Listen, it's all amazing. I love that. I love that aspect. Meaning, I wish you guys, you know, grow and be so successful. I want to hear that you guys have a huge portfolio in the future and growing big and doing the right stuff. And it sounds really exciting. Tell me something a little bit about your experience in terms of investors. You guys obviously have your own investors. Are you still at the friends and family sector, or you already have an operation that goes beyond it? You could tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So started with, you know, some of our deals were just direct relationships we've already had. Now more so it's just building relationships with new investors. So we're constantly, you know, meeting new people, creating relationships with people so they can invest in future deals. A big thing for us is we started a meetup networking event here in Wisconsin area. So I mean, that was big. That's how we met a good portion of our investors, but it's always just, you know, marketing, finding new investors and kind of bringing them in and you know, meeting with them and sitting down and just developing those relationships that ultimately lead to investing in deals.
Amazing. What can you tell us before we set our goodbyes? If you could tell us a little bit of how everybody can find you, meaning obviously I have the links, you guys can find it above and below all the links, but tell us a little bit of how everybody can find you guys.
Yeah. So the best way is through our website. So that's if you just type in www.smartassetcapital.com, have some stuff
smart
on there.
Smartassetcapital.com.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the site.
Smartassetcapital.com. Great. Okay. Go ahead.
And then, so we have some educational stuff on there. I've put out some eBooks on finding deals, underwriting deals, asset management, a whole bunch of different things, you know, free content on there. Everything's free. And then, yes, I mean, through there, you can click the contact. That'll directly shoot to my email. My email is brock@smartassetcapital.com. Also, if on Instagram, I'm trying to post more and more on there and put out educational content. That's just @BrockMogensen. So yeah, feel free to reach out. Always happy to connect with people and talk real estate.
Beautiful. Guys, you heard that. You can reach them. You can reach Brock directly, and you can learn more about real estate. And obviously, if you're interested in seeing if you guys, you know, a good fit to invest, it sounds like they have a lot of very fascinating activities. And you know what? Meaning, I'm curious to hear what will come up in the future. That would be awesome. Brock, thank you so much for being with us. I'm going to tell you guys, I'm going to see you in the next show. Check out all the links above below. And I'm going to see you in the next show. Take care. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.